Everyday office workers, stay-at-home moms, wired retirees all send off regular emails to colleagues, friends, and family. Many of us assume that, like the letter we once stamped and slid into a mailbox, our email will reach its destination. Alistair Rampell wasn't so sure that the email was going where it was actually supposed to, so he created a way for emailers to track their missives covertly after clicking on send. So what do you think of such a tracking device? Nifty or nefarious? Do you want to know where your emails go and whether they get read? And will the existence of this tracking program change the way you treat email? Join the conversation. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Alistair Rampell. He is the founder and CEO of Rampell Software in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which created DidTheyReadIt.com, the website that will help you track your emails. And he's with us from his office in Cambridge. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Describe for us how this technology actually works. You send an email, and how can you tell whether I've looked at it or not?
Well, basically, when you send an email, our software, it's actually more of a service than software, but our service will insert a little tracking code onto it. And what the tracking code does is it changes your email a little bit. It's almost like attaching an invisible image at the very bottom that cannot be seen by the recipient. However, when the recipient receives your message, when he opens the email and downloads the message, he'll also download the little tracking code, the little image, which will have the effect of informing our server that the message was opened, because the image is only downloaded when the message is actually opened. So then our system will inform the sender of the email that the message was indeed delivered and it was indeed read. And we actually provide you with a couple different things. We tell you how long the message was read for, and we also tell you what physical location it was read at. So if I send you an email and you're in Washington, D.C., as soon as you open the email, I will receive a receipt back saying that you read it for 15 seconds in Washington, D.C. at NPR.
Indeed, we did a practice run earlier today, and that's exactly what we got. I'm looking at the tracking box here, the tracking summary. Total open 9 times by 2 readers, so you know if somebody also forwarded it to somebody else and if they read it.
Right, exactly. One of the features of our software is it will let you know if the message was forwarded and furthermore how many times it was actually read. It won't tell you who it was, or rather whom it was forwarded to, but it will tell you if it was forwarded and how many times.
Mm-hmm. And if those people read it.
Exactly, and how long they read it for.
Or at least if they opened it.
Right.
Okay. You've got this open 9 times, and you've got details of every single opening here, so you can actually tell how long somebody was looking at this particular email. How did you come up with this idea?
Well, I mean, the main impetus behind it is that people just kind of assume that email works. And that when you send an email, it reaches the recipient. And, you know, once upon a time, that used to be mainly true. But the problem is with the advent of spam and just the torrents of spam that people get, I know that in my inbox, I probably get 100 spam messages for every 2 or 3 legitimate messages that I get. And what that means is that sometimes legitimate email gets caught in the spam file, and you don't read it. I don't read it. So the idea behind this is really, there's nothing nefarious behind it. It's really just to figure out if your email was delivered successfully and if it was read. And also, it helps give you more information. I mean, a lot of people, if you're applying for a job, it's very important for you to know that your resume reached your potential employer. If you are trying to sell something to somebody, it's very important to you to know that your email got through, and that's kind of where our product comes in.
And the cost?
We charge $50 per year, so about $4 a month.
Let's get some people involved in the conversation if you'd like to join us. It's 800-989-8255, or you can send us email, totn@npr.org. And let's begin with Steve, and Steve is with us from Ogden, Utah.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm in the field of architectural consulting, and a great deal of documentation, drawings, et cetera, are all shared, if not on FTP sites, by standard email, and it's incredibly important for us to know in a timely way that drawings, documents have been received and read. This is a great thing for us.
So you see it as the electronic equivalent of registered mail?
Yeah, exactly.
And you say it's incredibly important. Is it $50 a year important to you?
when you're working on buildings that cost up to $100 million, $50 a year is nothing.
And Alistair Rampell, is Steve the kind of customer you're looking towards?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that there are many different kinds of customers that we have and that we're getting right now. There typically are professionals that want to see if their mail is getting through because it's very valuable for them. Like the primary form of communication for so many people these days is no longer telephone but email. And, you know, when you call somebody, you know that the call goes through. When you send a letter, you can send a certified, as you said before, you can send registered mail. You know it goes through, but there's never really been any way for people to tell if their email goes through. And, you know, that's why we hope that this product will fill that void.
Steve, thanks for the call.
My pleasure.
Let's bring Joshua Halberstam in on this conversation. He's the author of, among other books, Everyday Ethics, and he joins us from our bureau in New York. Nice to speak with you again.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
So what kind of ethical dilemmas does this new technology
create? Well, I don't know if it's not perhaps it's not nefarious, but it's certainly this kind of technology will certainly transform the way we communicate with one another. And in that sense, it has very significant ramifications, I think.
In what ways, do you think?
Well, for one thing, the cyberspace used to be a place of intimacy where I can talk to you and I will know whether or not you're talking back to me. And in fact, as we move to IM, what happens is that we move from the mail model of letters to actual in real time talk with one another. And that's true, as pointed out. When I talk to you, I know whether or not you're answering me or not. The problem is that now we can no longer rely on any kind of intimacy because of, for one thing, I mean, which was not mentioned in this system, when you forward the email, for example, mm-hmm. you now know where the other people are who opened it. So this widens the kind of scope of that information that I'm allowing other people into. And in that sense, I will no longer, when I send you an email, if you notice in the actual what goes on here, why is this tracking being done surreptitiously? Why can't you tell the person, listen, this email is being checked to see whether or not you read it or not?
We decide to leave that up to the individual. We've thought about doing that, but it's hard for us to force people to acknowledge this. It's not really our responsibility. There are people that do use this with very, very good means, and just to really tell if people are reading their email or not, and they don't want to necessarily be broadcasting an advertisement for our product. And, you know, I completely agree with them. I don't think that we should necessarily force that. If people think that in any way this software is unethical or immoral, then, you know, one, they don't really have to use it. But two, they can voluntarily disclose that they are using it to everybody that reads their email.
Well, I just wanted to, there was a quote today about this new service in USA Today, which I'm sure you read, Alistair Rampell.
It
violates our electronic space in a way that's as uncomfortable as someone violating our physical space, says Mitchell Kurtzman, a partner at technology investment firm Hummer Winblad. Add this company to the long list of people who are making the Internet a less attractive place to live and work.
Well, you know, that's certainly their opinion, and they're entitled to it. But at the same time, I think people are always afraid of new technology that gives people more information. When caller ID first became widely available, people were scared of that. I guess it does give more information about what you are and what you're doing, but at the same time, the Internet is a scary place in many cases because it's so anonymous. I mean, you think about commerce 15 years ago. If you wanted to buy a stereo, you'd go to Walmart or you'd go to Target and you'd buy your stereo. If you had a problem with it, you know where they're located. You can go back there, you can call them, you can talk to the employees. But today, you know, you can do commerce on eBay. You can deal with a site that you've never heard of, and a lot of these people don't have phone numbers. Email has become so ubiquitous and such a principal form of communication that people don't even use phones in some cases. And there's no accountability. You don't know if they're going through. I mean, one of the useful features of our software product is, you know, if you conducted a sale on eBay and you sent the money, you never heard back from them, you probably want to know if the person's there, if they're reading their emails or not. You know, this has certainly very legitimate purposes and very legitimate uses. I mean, I completely understand where that person is coming from, but you know, there are many people that I think will use this responsibly and will use it in a manner to just help them do business more effectively.
Alistair Rampell is founder and CEO of Rampell Software in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Also with us, Joshua Halberstam, a professor at Teachers College at Columbia University. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. And this is Mike, and Mike is with us from Sandy, Utah.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. The question I have is, don't most people, maybe even yourself, Neil, use Internet Explorer as your tool to read email?
No, I don't, but most people may.
I use Mozilla myself, but before I left Mozilla, I found that if I had my Internet Explorer, which I would say probably more than 90% of the people out there use as their email reader program, have a in the toolbar a option they can turn on to get a receipt, where which when their email is delivered, they get a return email to their email address that says that it was delivered. Now, I keep hearing your guests, or at least one of your guests.
I do have that option in my toolbox now that you mention it. Go ahead, Mike.
I heard your guest say something about that it's really nice to have people know that your email is read. We often don't know that even though it's delivered to a particular person, it might be an assistant that reads it. Anything could happen to it, Neil, and it just sounds to me like this is make money kind of program that we already have options out there that are just almost as good.
Well, let me.
If your guest can just address that.
Yeah, I can address that. I mean, you're talking about Microsoft Outlook, I believe, their return receipt feature. And they have a feature to request a return receipt, but the problem with that is that, A, it really only works with Microsoft Outlook. So if I have a Mac, which I do actually, I primarily use a Macintosh, and you send me an email and you request a return receipt, you won't get one. I won't even know that you requested a return receipt. And the other problem is that with those return receipts, they're optional. So, you know, whereas with certified mail, if I send you a letter via the U.S. Postal Service and I request a receipt, it's not really requesting a receipt. I'll get a receipt, or you don't get the mail.
Right, but anybody can sign for that at the place that it's delivered.
Right, but the difference is with Outlook, you know, Outlook has a rudimentary form of return receipts built in, but, you know, I encourage you to try it, and I believe you'll find it doesn't work 90 to 95% of the time.
When I had mine turned on, I was pretty satisfactory that it gave me a return receipt. Now, I couldn't tell whether or not anybody read it, but, of course, I keep hearing from you that this is insured, that it's been read at the other end. There's no insurance that...
What we do is we track the duration of time that the message is open for. Whereas Outlook, when you do accept a return receipt, because, again, it's voluntary with Outlook, I can just say no to all return receipts, and then you'll never know. I can read the messages, and you won't know.
Well, we just have a couple of minutes. I wanted to move on to another issue. This is an email we got from Teresa Benedetti in New York City. It will absolutely change the way we think about email, just as caller ID has changed the way I choose to answer my phone, and as a consequence, how I now always leave a message knowing that the other person already knew that I called. Joshua Halberstam?
Yeah. You know, this is interesting. This is a deep paradox about privacy. To the extent that this company will succeed, the less it will be an invasion of privacy. Because privacy is always about expectations. When I send you a letter in the mail, even if we had devices that let us open letters, most of us would feel guilty doing that because we have some kind of deep social contract going on here that says this stuff is private, unlike a postcard, which I can read. But as this becomes much more popular, then I know that people will be tracking whether or not they read what I wrote or not, then it will change our expectations. And because of that, it will change the way we think we're being invaded by our privacy. But it will change the way we communicate. I think that clearly this will do that.
Alistair Rampell, again, just a couple of seconds left, but what's several emails and calls on this question. What's to prevent this being used by spammers?
What we do is we limit you to 750 messages a month, which is probably too many for individual use. Very few people send that many messages a month. But because we charge $50 a year, no spammer could ever afford to use this. I mean, spammers send out millions of messages a day, and to do that would be actually so cost prohibitive that, you know, if every single spammer had to use our product, it would end spam.
Alistair Rampell, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Founder and CEO of Rampell Software, and Joshua Halberstam, thank you as well.
Thank you.
Joshua Halberstam at the University of Columbia University, the Teachers College. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.